Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now, back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
And we're back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. I'm Carrie Weber, along with Father Matt Malone and our friend and colleague, Robert David Sullivan. And we are talking about the news at the intersection of the church and the world. We've talked about Syria. We've talked about misattributed quotes. And our next article is something that Robert has brought to the table about the Catholic vote and the presidential election.
Yes, we ran a story on AmericaMagazine.org last week from our national correspondent, Michael O'Loughlin, about a new analysis suggesting that Hillary Clinton narrowly won the Catholic vote in last fall's election rather than Mr. Trump, which has kind of been a talking point, a lot of analysis saying that he'd won it. This is based on new data, new polling data, including some polling that took place after the election, where people were asked how they voted. And the analysis suggests that Mrs. Clinton won 48% to 45% among Catholic voters, which is pretty much identical to the overall popular vote. And I think it's kind of in the margin of error there. So we're really saying that the Catholic vote mirrored the vote overall, and it was very close and did not represent any kind of big mandate for one or the other candidate. But it is an interesting follow-up to the exit polls that may not have been completely accurate in the aftermath of the election.
And isn't it true, Robert, that the Catholic vote in presidential elections, or we should probably say, to be more accurate, the votes of Catholics
right.
in the presidential elections does pretty closely follow the national numbers?
It has for the past about 40 years, mm-hmm. Beginning in the 70s. Before that, it was a pretty lopsidedly Democratic, much more so than the country as a whole. But that changed beginning in the mid-70s, and now it's pretty much reflective of the overall vote, although there is a big divide within Catholic voters between Hispanic and non-Hispanic voters. And Mrs. Clinton won Hispanic Catholics by a very large margin, and the opposite happened with non-Hispanic Catholics, which were carried by Mr. Trump.
And there was also a big divide in age groups, that the older Catholics went more toward Trump and the younger Catholics went more toward Clinton. Is that right?
Right, although that has something to do with ethnic breakdown, because younger Catholics are more likely to be Hispanic.
Gotcha.
Why do you think it matters? I mean, apart from just it's an interesting bit of information.
Well, it says something about the importance of Catholic voters, that they can't be taken for granted by either party. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. Which is that neither party is exactly in alignment with Catholic social teaching and pro-life teaching. And it actually gives Catholic voters a lot of influence, because they can't be taken for granted. But it also shows that there's a lot of divisions within the Catholic community, just as there are in the American electorate overall.
And there is when we said earlier that there isn't a Catholic vote, they tend not, what we were talking about is this diversity within
right.
The Catholic electorate.
Right.
But it seems to me that diversity is what makes them, both in worldview and also in regional and ethnic affiliation and so forth, that is what makes them swing voters, and swing voters are the most important voters in an election, right?
Right. I mean, I'm not sure how many Catholics actually swing back and forth between the two parties, because the evidence seems to be that, just like every other group in America, which is becoming more partisan and swinging less it's not so much that the Catholic voters swing more, but that they're more in the center, and even a small swing can really represent a big impact in an election.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We're talking about the news of the week and the reporting from America Magazine. And we have Elaine on the line from Florida. Hello, Elaine. Welcome to America This Week.
Hello. Yes, I'd like to talk about, I just heard you talking about the voting. As a Catholic, as any Catholic in their conscience, there was no choice in this election. I mean, there was a choice, a clear choice. It was for the unborn. I mean, even Hillary wanted abortion right up to 9 months. And there is not even a thought. That's a soul. That's absolute murder. As a Catholic, that's your number one. You have to prevent that. You have to save life.
Sure.
There is no other choice.
And did you know Catholics who would say, geez, that's a really, that is an issue of first importance, but there are also a lot of other issues that are important issues from the pro-life perspective, and we have to account for those? Or and how did you respond to those folks who said that?
I told them that you have to not vote your conscience on that. There was a clear choice. You have to vote for life. It's murder. As a Catholic, to me, that's being a hypocrite. If you can't prevent, if you can't save life, where are we? That's why life is so cheap today. There's so many shootings and killings, I believe, in my heart, because it's cheap. You can just get rid of your kid if it's inconvenient. If you want to have an extra money, you want to have an extra car, you don't need that kid. And that's why I believe the world is really a mess. And when nothing else matters, that's the number one thing. And then everything else falls in place. But if you even Planned Parenthood, Hillary was for Planned Parenthood.
Right.
That is making experiments with babies, aborted babies. I mean, this is infanticide. This is murder. This is just, there was no choice.
All right, Elaine. Well, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. I mean, it's not an uncommon position among some Catholics.
Well, that is kind of the dividing point where the after Roe v. Wade decision in the early 70s, that's kind of the point at which the Catholic vote, as it were, was not overwhelmingly Democratic anymore, because it did reflect a split in people's commitment or in people's stands on these issues, because a lot of public opinion polls, even on abortion, show that Catholic response to polls pretty much mirror the overall American population in many issues.
So we're going to continue to have a debate in this country about what the Church's position ought to be in the public square and how we ought to account for the Church's teachings in our public decision-making as voters, as elected officials, and so forth. And, you know, that I think that that's a pretty complicated calculus. I share Elaine's concern about the abortion issue, and I am, and the editors of America are resolutely pro-life, but that doesn't mean that I think our choices are always straightforward. And the choices of the American voters, if they are not straightforward, then the choices of the electorate of France are not always straightforward either. Particularly, also, I think, if you care about the Catholic tradition and so forth. And so we are delighted to welcome, as we welcomed him to our pages for the first time this week, we welcome to this broadcast for the first time Pascal Emmanuel Gobry, who is contributing writer for America Magazine and is based in Paris. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you are the author of a piece called Zombie Catholics versus French Secularism, which has been posted online at americamagazine.org and is the cover story for the current issue of America. For our listeners who haven't heard about it and haven't read the piece, what are you saying here?
Well, the bottom line, the fact that the piece is centered on is that Catholicism is undergoing a true revival in France, which many people had written off as you know, the most secular country on earth, this side of Cuba or North Korea, and sort of a libertine country and all that stuff. But there is a real revival going on. And then the piece goes on to ask what that means for the future in terms of politics, in terms of culture, for the country.
And what are some of the anecdotal and quantifiable signs of this revival?
Right. So anecdotally, the simplest fact is that churches are packed on Sunday now, in at least in the big cities, and increasingly in the countryside. And 10 years ago, that was very, very much not the case. If you go to Sunday High Mass today in any church in Paris that I've seen or that I'm aware of, the church will be full to the gills. In some churches, you may even have to sit on the floor, and people eagerly do. And, you know, 10 years ago, which is very short on the time scale of religious history and social history, a church would be like, on Sunday Mass, would be like one third, one half full, mostly with elderly people, elderly women, except for the truly big churches like Notre Dame. And so quantifiably, the slide in invocations to the priesthood is not growing, but has plateaued. There is a rise in adult baptisms since 2007. They're up by double-digit amounts, double-digit percentage. And there is a real renewal in online activism and sort of activity, like people are becoming more engaged, committing to various works of mercy. So it's real. It's real. The
right.
question is, what's gonna happen next?
And actually, there's a question that prior to that, which is, why is this happening? I mean, what accounts for this?
Right.
This embryonic renaissance.
It's, you know, the spirit blows where it will. I genuinely don't. I have theories, of course.
Yeah.
I can come up with theories, but yours are as good as mine.
What would one of those theories be?
Well, I think that certainly for a lot of people of my generation, and the new Catholics are young. There's just a lot of them are children of divorce, and a lot of them are realizing that their parents lived the secular progressive lifestyle, quote unquote, meaning, you know, get money, have fun, they're starting to build out their lives. They're starting to think about marriage. They're dating, and they're realizing, I don't want this. I want something more. And certainly, anecdotally, from a lot of friends of mine who were sort of brought up as Christmas and Easter Catholics, and suddenly are going to Mass every week, and suddenly are, you know, really active raising money for either Christians in the Middle East or the homeless or what have you. That seems to be a strong part of the concern. It's like, you know, the what my society is working, my parent is offering you as a way of life and as a set of values. My parents tried it and I saw it fail for them.
Right.
And is there anything particularly French about this? Because I just want to say, last week we published on AmericanMagazine.org some numbers on projections of Christian and Catholic populations over the next few years, next few decades, and I noticed that France uh-huh. France stood out as being the only major European country that is not projected to have a big loss in the Christian population. So this revival seems not yet to have spread to Germany and Italy and Spain, places like that. So is there something particularly French about this?
I mean, empirically there is, right? I mean, I'm no expert on Italian or German Catholicism or Spanish or whatever. But certainly it seems to be a mostly French phenomenon. I don't know. I mean, you know.
You mentioned a lot in the story, a lot about the political scene there and things like the reaction to the legalization of same-sex marriage.
Right. I mean, the sort of trigger, the thing that made it burst out into the mainstream, that made all of the country and really a lot of the world sort of sit up and realize, was the same-sex marriage bill and the protests that followed it, which mobilized up to 1 million people on the streets, which is really huge, especially for a conservative protest.
Right. And I must say that, I mean, Americans were certainly in the political classes in the East Coast. We were surprised to see that. And I think because, you know, our thinking was, you know, well, France is a pretty liberal place and, you know, pretty liberal social norms. And were you surprised to see it?
I was completely surprised.
Okay. All right. So we hadn't been missing something. Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, from what I know, the organizers were surprised. You know, something happened, which is why I talk about this meme, that it was a sort of May 68 in reverse, meaning this sort of, you know, cultural, this like big protest event that doesn't accomplish its political goals, the bill passed anyway, and the Catholic candidate for president, François Fillon, doesn't propose to overturn it, even though he proposes to limit adoption for same-sex couples. You know, sort of creates like this new generation of, is like this founding event for a new generation like Woodstock, or, you know, and sort of seeps out, you know, sort of its ideas sort of end up colonizing the culture and then downstream, you know, changing politics and society.
Are there other issues like that in the story? You point out even like environmental issues, because this isn't necessarily always on the left or right side of the equation. Some of the
right, exactly, right. I mean, one aspect of this sort of new generation of Catholics is that they care really deeply about the idea of being sort of, you know, whatever you want to call it, full spectrum Catholics, and they care about social and conservative issues, they care about economic justice, they care very much about the environment, and they're really careful about not being single issue activists.
Right.
And I don't think it's so much as they see the American Christian right as a cautionary tale. I think that it's more that the intellectual leaders of the movement are trying to, you know, are really trying to invent a different way of engaging in politics. And this is one of the things which is distinctly French, which is that all of the country is fed up with traditional politics and the two-party system, right? Mm-hmm. The two candidates that are leading in the poll for the presidential elections are independent candidates. They're not from the two main center-right and center-left parties. So there's this, you know, the society as a whole is fed up with partisan politics. And the way this works out for the intellectuals in the sort of new Catholic scene is that they try to find, you know, what they call the buzz phrase is meta-political. You know, they want to be meta-political, meaning trying to find out intellectual and social and activist ways of affecting politics without engaging in partisan politics. I mean, some do, obviously.
trying to find a new way forward, as it were. We're talking with Pascal Emmanuel Gobry here on America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We're talking about his article in America Magazine and at americamagazine.org called Zombie Catholics versus French Secularism, a piece about this revival of Catholicism in France.
Now, Pascal, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how this Catholic revival that you've been describing plays out in the political sphere, particularly
right.
in the presidential election that's coming up very soon in France.
Right, right. So there was a conservative primary at the end of last year, and one of the candidates, François Fillon, surprised all observers by smashing all of his opponents. He was 20 points ahead in the first round and won the second round with 65 points. And he was like the Catholic candidate. And, you know, Catholic voters, I mean, the Catholic vote didn't account for all of his margin, but it certainly played a key role. And it was certainly the first time in maybe in living memory, certainly in many decades, when a politician, you know, sort of wore his faith on his sleeve. And just to give you an idea of how far I talk about this anecdote and the piece, of how far apart the French and American culture are, Fillon was asked on a TV talk show about some cuts to healthcare and his plan. And he sort of looked the interviewer in the eye and put his hand over his heart and said, "I'm a believing Catholic. I would never do anything that would hurt the vulnerable," which is sort of a dodge and is like the most, you know, the most common thing in American politics. Like, you know, every politician says, "Well, I'm a Christian, therefore blah, blah, blah." But in France, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, using the F word with your grandmother,
right?
One of the most,
right? Because you've kind of violated the cultural norm, right. Which is that the political discourse is entirely secular,
right?
Right.
Which
exactly.
is so odd to think of as Americans.
He had a spokesman on TV once who was wearing a cross, like a little cross on a chain around her neck, and like that was controversial.
But it paid off for him in the primary.
It did pay off, and it did pay off hugely, and that's the point. Like, usually the candidate with that sort of rhetoric gets like 2%.
Right.
And he blew all of his opponents out of the water. And of course, you know, if you believe in divine providence and divine providence having a sense of humor, the story of Fillon is also a cautionary tale about Christian engagement in politics, because he was, you know, right after winning the primary, he was involved in this huge ethics scandal, even though part of the reason why he won the primary was because he ran on his integrity. And so, you know, that's also a familiar picture for Christians who place their trust in politicians.
We should probably give a little more information on that, like the scandal.
He was revealed to have essentially put his wife on his payroll as a parliamentary aide for many, many years, even though it was unclear how much actual work she did, which is, you know, lots of people argue about whether it's technically legal. It's certainly, you know, not a good look when you're running as the candidate of integrity to have put your wife on the payroll, on the public payroll, for a sort of semi-fake job.
So has his support gone to other candidates, or is it? I mean, there was such a unified Catholic vote in the primary.
Right, right. There's not a unified Catholic vote in the sense that all Catholics vote as bloc, but there's certainly more people voting as Catholics, and his support has dipped in the polls since that scandal. But his base of support is really strong. So of the people who now say they're going to vote for him, 80 to 90% say they're sure they're going to vote for him,
right?
Which is much higher than for almost any other candidate.
So what you're saying is that there are folks who are, I mean, there isn't a block of Catholic votes that all, you know, that moves in one specific direction. But what you're saying is that there are voters who are Catholic who are increasingly voting consciously as Catholics.
Is right, that, yeah. Exactly. And who, yes, and who are, as a result of having Catholicism as a bigger part of their identity, are more engaged in politics or in activism or other politics-like activities as a result.
And
so their impact tends to be disproportionate. Mm-hmm.
And how are the French bishops responding to this? How are they responding to this emerging Catholic revival? And secondly, do they have a voice in the political process? Are they taking positions not on candidates but on you know, public policy,
right?
And does that have an impact?
It doesn't have it typically doesn't have much of an impact. Their role in politics. So France has this populist party called the National Front, which tends to get described as far right, but is really more populist, anti-immigrant, but also anti-globalization. So it doesn't map really well into the sort of Anglo-American categories. And usually their statements on politics usually boil down to saying really strongly, but without actually saying it, vote for anybody except the National Front.
Right.
Which is becoming awkward for them because lots of Catholics also vote for the National Front. And one question, the Catholic renewal, a lot of those new Catholics don't map easily on the French political spectrum in terms of their views, but when push comes to shove, most of them will vote for right-wing candidates. And it's an open question whether they will vote more for the far right or for the center right. And right now, the National Front isn't trying to make a play for those voters, but it might in the future. In terms of how the bishops are responding politically, they do have a voice. Like, they put out a press release, but they're not organized politically, as they're not in the U.S. Right? I mean, they don't. As far as I know, in the U.S., the conference puts out, like, you know, issue guides and things like that, but they don't organize politically the way, you know, some evangelical churches do.
Right. I think that's fair to say. And in fact, we led this broadcast by talking about the bishop's recent statement on the president's actions in Syria. And and my guess is that messaging is as effective in France as it is here, which is to say, in some ways
not
it is, but you know, not dramatically so. right.
I mean, you know, it, with few exceptions, I think it's fair to say that, you know, in the history of the church, bishops tend to be following movements of the spirit rather than leading them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is no knock against bishops as group. It's just how things tend to happen.
Right. I mean, it's the way it's all, the whole thing is set up. Yeah.
One of the things I found really interesting in your description of this revival is the way in which it actually plays out in people's, you know, everyday lives and actions and decisions. So not just politically, not just showing up at Mass, but then making decisions about how you live your life based on the fact that you are going to Mass and involved politically. And a couple of things you mentioned were really interesting. One was a journal that has been founded, a review, an intellectual review. One was a cooperative cafe, and one was an app that was meant to kind of help people connect and serve people who are experiencing homelessness. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about those projects.
Yeah, sure. So, yes, that's you're really seeing this ferment of sort of new initiatives that are sort of weird and quirky, but also interesting and sort of end up having legs. So there's this one review called Limit, which is sort of which is an intellectual review. It's not a mass media outlet, but it's sort of led by these 20-somethings who make me feel old, even though I'm 30, who are full of energy and who are putting out really clever articles, sort of blurring the lines between, you know, in politics. So, you know, both, you know, I mean, attacking, you know, both capitalism and abortion and so on and so forth. You know, one of the people associated with the founding of this review, for example, is well known for recycling everything in his home and living in the countryside and recycling everything in terms of, you know, sort of trying to live like a completely, you know, different life. And he has like a wife and kids. He's not a monk or a hermit or anything.
Right.
So you have like collaborative cafes sprouting up where people go watch talks, see talks by people, and they also hang out and they also organize projects. There's an app called Entourage, their tagline is the social network for people who don't have a social network, which is an app that helps. On the consumer side, it's an app that lets anybody figure out something to do in their neighborhood to help a real homeless person. So, you know, one person would post on the app, here's a person on the corner of such and such street. They're here. They need a blanket. And then so you can see it on your app. And if you have a blanket, you can go and give it to that person. And then there's also a version for NGOs and other groups who help the homeless, so they can coordinate and sort of not, you know, you don't need like three different groups going over the same block the same night, and then the next block nobody's going there, that sort of thing. And so you see it's a bunch of these sort of innovative, slightly quirky projects. The guy who founded Entourage is a guy who was really successful in the tech industry and sort of dropped everything and took on a pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela and came back a faithful Catholic.
Wow.
And sort of changed his life.
Right. So it's motivated by their faith, but not even necessarily, it's not just church-based. It's involving the whole community. It's involving the whole city.
Right, exactly. So this organization, its bylaws state that it's a secular nonprofit organization. They have partnerships and they seek out partnerships with all sorts of organizations that help the homeless, you know, secular, Catholic, Muslim, whatever.
So this is not,
even though
not
even
really
some
like
organizations
a...
will say they're not going to work with him because the founder is Catholic, but
sure. Is there we have about a minute left, Pascal. Is there a,
sure.
Is there a discernible Francis effect in all of this? I mean, is Pope Francis a part of the conversation or the motivation or the this movement?
He's certainly very popular, extremely popular among French Catholics and among the new Catholics. You know, the idea of a throwaway culture that sort of, you know, binds together the idea of sort of consumer capitalism that creates throwaway items and throwing away children, for example, in abortion,
right.
You know, is the kind of idea that really resonates with this breed of new Catholics. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that Pope Francis is causing the revival, but he's certainly very popular with the new Catholics, and he certainly isn't hurting it at all.
Yeah, I think we'll give most of the credit to the Holy Spirit, as you suggested at the top of this conversation. Pascal Emmanuel Gobry, who lives in Paris, is a contributing writer to America and a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and a columnist at theweek.com. And you can find his cover story on the French Catholic Revival at americamagazine.org. Pascal, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless.
Okay, have a blessed Holy Week. That's quite a remarkable story. I mean, I thought to myself when I saw that manuscript come in, who would have thought that there was a revival in
Pascal,
Catholic France?
Pascal did.
And Holy Week's a wonderful time to talk about it. So you have been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. To learn more about all of these stories, please visit us at americamagazine.org. And to subscribe to America Magazine, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Carrie Weber, I'm Father Matt Malone. Have a blessed Holy Week and a happy Easter.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.